Well, what's Universal Time? Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Victor Beatty reporting. The U.S. Defense Secretary says Saudi Arabia backs the Iran nuclear deal. U.S. Defense Secretary Ashton Carter, meeting Saudi King Salman and his defense counterpart, told reporters Wednesday they assured him they support the accord to restrain Iran's nuclear program. But Carter acknowledged the Saudis have reservations about verification and sanctions.
The only reservations that we discussed were ones that we thoroughly share, namely that we attend to verification of the agreement as it's implemented, and also with respect to the so-called snapback of sanctions. So those are aspects of the implementation of the agreement that we discussed.
However, news accounts also indicate the Saudis are concerned the deal will increase Iran's standing in the Middle East, allowing it to increase support for insurgent movements like the Houthis in neighboring Yemen. Vote counting in Burundi continues with final results from Tuesday's presidential ballot expected Friday. Incumbent Pierre Nkurunziza is widely expected to win a controversial third term since the opposition boycotted the vote. In an interview with Reuters, opposition leader Agathon Rwasa called on Mr. Nkurunziza to hold talks with rivals on forming a national unity government.
The idea of a government of national unity can be accepted. War can only destroy. Why the dialogue can help us overcome all these troubles of ours.
Mr. Nkurunziza's bid for a third term sparked international condemnation for violating the Constitution's two-term limit and the Arusha Agreement that ended the country's civil war. But he was backed by a constitutional court which ruled the first term was the result of a parliamentary action, not a popular vote. This is VOA News. President Obama late Wednesday marked the reauthorization of the 15-year-old African Growth and Opportunity Act, or AGOA, with a White House reception.
Now that it's been renewed, AGOA will be central to our efforts to boost the trade and investment that supports hundreds of thousands of jobs, both in Africa and in the United States, creating opportunities for all of us. And I'm especially pleased that AGOA will continue to encourage good governance and labor and human rights.
Mr. Obama said despite challenges, Africa is incredibly dynamic and resilient with extraordinary opportunities for the U.S. AGOA resulted in boosting U.S.-Africa trade to $73 billion last year, with U.S. exports accounting for slightly more than half that total. More than 40 sub-Saharan countries are eligible for trade benefits under the law, through which most imports from Africa enter the U.S. duty-free. Two of the main beneficiaries have been oil exporters Angola and Nigeria. Mr. Obama heads to Africa Friday with stops in Kenya and Ethiopia. Arriving late Friday in Nairobi, Mr. Obama will take part in a business summit. Then National Security Advisor Susan Rice says it's on to Ethiopia.
The president's visit will reflect the fact that we have a long-standing, strong bilateral relationship with Ethiopia. Among our shared interests are facilitating peace in South Sudan, countering al-Shabaab in Somalia, and advancing Ethiopia's growth and development, as well as promoting regional stability.
Mr. Obama will meet Ethiopian officials and civil society groups and then address the African Union Monday before returning to Washington. At least 15 people drowned when a ferry collided with a cargo boat and capsized on the Nile River near Cairo late Wednesday. Police arrested the captain of the vessel. Emergency workers rescued six people. South Sudan rebel leader Riek Machar sacked one of his commanders, Peter Gadet, who is among those recently blacklisted by the UN, with one diplomat in Ethiopia suggesting the move will make it harder to reach a lasting peace in the country. The Associated Press reports another rebel commander has also been removed. A rebel spokesman declined to provide details. African Union and Somali forces on Wednesday captured an al-Shabaab stronghold in Bardhira, about 350 kilometers southwest of the capital city of Mogadishu. Coalition forces have pushed the militant group al-Shabaab out of most of their strongholds, but the group remains a deadly force capable of attacking government and civilian targets. The White House confirmed on Wednesday that the Obama administration is in the final stages of drafting a plan aimed at closing the U.S. military detention center at Guantanamo Bay, Cuba. President Obama made the closure of the prison a priority since taking office in 2009. Inmates have slowly been transferred out of the facility and now only 116 remain. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Thursday, July 23rd, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Cameroon investigates twin suicide bomb attacks in the country's far northern region.
All of those who were injured, and unfortunately there were many of them, all of them have been taken to the hospital and they are receiving the appropriate treatment right now.
Issa Chiroma Bakari is Cameroon's information minister. South Sudan rebels deny a split in their movement after two commanders were relieved of their duties. Guinea-Bissau prepares for a possible Ebola outbreak. And Burundi's president is committed to forming a national unity government after a controversial presidential election.
Our president, Pierre Nkurunziza, is ready to go further to reform a government that can include all the forces of the Burundi society and all the sensibilities of Burundi government.
Willy Nyamitwe is the senior advisor on media and communication to President Pierre Nkurunziza, and a weakening in Uganda's currency causes panic. Those stories plus Mark Omar Sports and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Cameroon's President Paul Biya has condemned Wednesday's twin suicide bombings in a region repeatedly targeted by Boko Haram militants. The attacks happened simultaneously at a large market in a residential neighborhood in Maroua, the capital of Cameroon's far north region. They left at least 20 people dead and scores injured. Cameroon's information minister Issa Chiroma Bakari says those injured are receiving treatment while the administration awaits the outcome of a police investigation.
Yes, indeed, the head of state condemned it with the strongest term possible, and we are going to give a press conference maybe tomorrow after tomorrow when we receive the first result of the investigation, which already has been taking place.
Now, so which security agency has begun the investigation? Is it the police or the other security agencies as a joint task force?
Yes, indeed. All of those who, in one way or another, are qualified to collect the information, to collect intelligence and put it at the disposal of the governor or of the military. All of them should be involved, police, gendarmerie, and the security forces. All of them, they have to combine their effort in order to deal with this horrible and unacceptable situation.
Those who were injured, are they in hospitals? And I understand some of the government officials will be going to visit them soon to assess the situation on the ground.
Yes, indeed. All of those who were injured, and unfortunately there were many of them, all of them have been taken to the hospital and they are receiving the appropriate treatment right now. Due care are being given to all of those who in one way or other were injured or traumatized. All of them are under very skillful hand.
Minister Chiroma, we also had reports that this suicide bombing is being perpetrated by Boko Haram. That has been going on in neighboring Nigeria. Now, what measures is your government trying to implement in Cameroon to protect unarmed civilians from these attacks engineered by Boko Haram?
Boko Haram is fighting us an asymmetric war, which means that you are dealing with invisible enemy. You do not know who is Boko Haram. When you are dealing with girl, age of between 8 and 15, you see them coming toward you. You cannot imagine that you have to deal. You are dealing with Boko Haram sympathizer or militant. When we have the intelligence, we have the commitment of our government, we have engagement and commitment of our soldiers. When the coordination is ready and in place, there is no doubt. It is the countdown of the end of Boko Haram will be triggered when everything is in place.
Issa Chiroma Bakari is Cameroon's information minister. He spoke with reporter Peter Clotty from the capital, Yaoundé. A spokesman says Burundian President Pierre Nkurunziza is committed to forming a national unity government after the results of Tuesday's controversial presidential election are made known. Those results are expected to be announced tomorrow, Friday, but some opposition groups says they don't recognize the results because the election violated the constitution. Willie Nyamitwe, senior advisor on media and communication to President Nkurunziza, says forming a unity government would be in line with Burundi's constitution.
First of all, the results from this election are going to be announced on Friday. So people who are calling the president and the government to form a government of a national unity have to know that it's already in our constitution. Article 129 of our constitution already suggests he who is forming a government to make it a government of national unity. But our president, Pierre Nkurunziza, is ready to go further to reform a government that can include all the forces of the Burundi society and all the sensibilities of Burundi government. The discussions that were ongoing under the facilitation of Uganda was about also forming a government of national unity after election. And the president of Burundi is committed to form a government of national unity according to our constitution.
I did talk with one opposition person who said that the opposition will be willing to talk about that only if the president agrees to talk about that as a former president. I mean, he cannot say that he was elected president because he said to do so will be in violation of the constitution.
No. I think Article 129 is clear. We have in our country people who don't want to face elections. People who only need to be into the cabinet without going through the polls. So let's just wait for the president to form his cabinet so we know the way he's going to take.
The constitution takes into account the Hutus and the Tutsis. Is the ruling party CNDD, FDD party, a Hutu or a Tutsi party?
You know, according to our constitution, no party can be 100% made by one ethnic group. All the ethnic groups must be represented in the party. So our ruling party is a party of national unity because it's the party that represents Hutus, Tutsis, and Twa of our country.
The story about African Union deploying military and human rights observers, is that at the request of your government?
Yeah, our government agreed that people can be deployed because some rumors were saying that we have FDLR militia here in the country, that some persons have been getting guns. So these observers are coming to make a follow-up to check if human rights are really respected in our country and if there are some young men affiliated to some political parties who have been armed. So they came today. And I think this is a good news. They can continue working closer with the Ministry of Foreign Affairs in Burundi. And we do hope people now will get to know the truth about what has been propagated as that, like youth who are armed. So these observers who are coming will help full decision that is going to help us and to help the international community to understand that in this country, it's not the ruling party that young guys who are armed, but those who are armed are from the opposition.
Willie Nyamitwe is the senior advisor on media and communication to President Pierre Nkurunziza of Burundi. He was speaking with me from the capital, Bujumbura. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Thursday, July 23rd. Please send your comments and opinions to Daybreak Africa at voanews.com. Daybreak Africa time is 14 minutes past the hour. Kenyan security forces will rely heavily on a system of closed-circuit cameras installed throughout Nairobi, the capital, to provide security during U.S. President Barack Obama's visit this week. But as Mohammed Yusuf reports, in the past, the camera system has not worked as well as advertised.
This is the crime scene where Parliament member George Mushai, his bodyguard and a driver were killed. Shot down in the pre-dawn hours of February 7th. The attack happened in the city centre, not far from the government buildings protected by security forces and closed circuit or CCTV cameras. The newly installed cameras were expected to help police identify the killers, and in fact, that night were recorded by this camera on top of this 24-storey building. But in the shadowy video obtained by VOA, it is impossible to make out distinct figures. Alois Lentimaga, vice chairman of the Parliament Security Committee, says CCTV failed to help solve the murders.
Investigation was thorough, very thorough. The other gadgets which are used to, especially the phone, some of those fellows were nabbed because of that. I don't think it's CCTV so much. Yeah, it's not so much of CCTV. Because CCTV is not fully operational.
Since then, the government installed more cameras. And security agencies will rely heavily on CCTV as part of security during President Obama's visit. Nairobi County Roads Executive Mohamed Abdullahi says previous problems are being addressed.
The feedback we expect from the ground into the control room is compromised when you have road infrastructure that are going on that affect our connectivity.
The cameras have cost the county government $4.4 million, an expenditure welcomed by police to fight crime and ease traffic congestion.
The cameras we are working on to put in place will be excellent in terms of performance. We do not want at any time for Kenyan citizens to feel that they have been shortchanged.
But many Kenyans say they are still waiting to see the system's value for the city. Mohamed Yusuf for VOA News, Nairobi.
South Sudan rebels loyal to former Vice President Riek Machar are denied that there has been a split in their movement. This after Machar Wednesday removed two commanders, Major General Peter Gadet and Major General Gadkouf, from their duties. Mabio Garang, the spokesman of the SPLA in opposition, says Machar did not fire his top commanders, but rather he plans to reassign them to other duties.
Firing is a very strong word. We are not calling it firing. It's a reshuffle. These kind of things happen in many organizations. We have had a reshuffle. Major General James Gadet, who was in charge of operations, and Major General Gados Gadkwad, who was in charge of logistics, and Major General James Kwong, who was the Division 1 commander, have been relieved. James Kwong has been promoted to Deputy Chief of General Staff for Operations. And Major General Gados and Major General Peter Gadet are pending their new assignments, are still pending.
Why is your leadership doing so at a time when you and the government are preparing to sign a final peace deal next month?
These are our own internal administrative issues. There should be no cause for alarm. They are a very normal thing, and they have nothing to do with the peace process. The peace process is still ongoing, and we are still committed to it.
Where are Major General Peter Gadet and Major General Gatot Gadkwot right now as I speak to you?
They are in Ethiopia. They were in Gambela on the way to Addis Ababa.
We understand that they have been arrested.
No. On our side, there is no such thing. They have not been arrested. It is just a normal reshuffle which has happened, but this is false.
What is the impact of this reshuffle to your commanders at a time when you need them?
Well, there are very many commanders, and the movement is a people's movement. So other sons and daughters of South Sudan will also be performing. It's not just for one person. So like I said, Major General Gadet and Major General Gadros will be reassigned to a different assignment. We have heard the rumors from some ambassadors of the Salva Kiir administration who are alleging that there has been a split in the movement. But maybe that is the wishful thinking of these people. Maybe this is what they want to happen. But and this is the reality inside their head. But this is subjective.
What is the mood of the other commanders down on the ground there?
Well, of course, any reshuffle will always cause voices of displeasure from certain areas. But generally speaking, the situation is normal. But just like everybody has their own interests, and maybe if you see that your person who was serving your interest has been removed, you might complain. But like I said, those are normal things, and they are normal parts of reshuffles. Whenever there's any reshuffle anywhere, there's always voices of complaint. But as an opposition, this is what we are struggling for people to be able to have that right to express their dissatisfaction with their leaders. So it's very normal, and we are continuing with the struggle and focusing on IGAD Plus. We don't want people to bring in rumor-mongering that is intended to derail the peace process.
That was Mabio Garang, spokesman of the Sudan People's Liberation Army in opposition. He was speaking with a VOA fellow, Tito Justin. Guinea, Sierra Leone, and Liberia continue to battle Ebola more than 18 months after the world's worst outbreak began. International health officials have stepped up assistance to boost capacity in a region with limited medical infrastructure and porous borders. From Guinea-Bissau, VOA's Mariama Diallo reports how one at-risk country is working to stop an epidemic before it happens.
Guinea-Bissau has never had a case of Ebola, but it's on people's minds.
Ebola is very dangerous, and we don't want it reaching us. We are small, and getting Ebola will devastate the country.
Before eating, we should wash our hands with soap to prevent Ebola.
Placido Cardoso credits a public awareness campaign, but he says international assistance from organizations like U.S.-based Centers for Disease Control has been key.
And then the work has been done also at the level of the health workers, training them, build their capacity on the prevention, sensitization at community level.
The Simão Mendes Hospital now has an Ebola ward tucked in the back of the facility.
When you arrive here, you clean your feet. Don't bring anything inside.
Your foot here, you clean up.
Ebola prevention hinges in monitoring. The country is particularly vulnerable, sharing a long border with Guinea, where the first Ebola case was identified in December 2013. The Ebola unit has two Sierra Leoneans under observation after they illegally entered the country. Elizabeth Lorne-Dipwo says the task is challenging.
Then when you go at the border, you realize actually there isn't any border. The borders are administrative. You don't really make the difference between Borutuma and the village on the other side of the border. The people just cross from one village to the other.
The World Health Organization ranks Guinea-Bissau 176 out of 190 in national health care. Dr. Faustino Gomez Correa says the realities of his country make an Ebola outbreak difficult to imagine.
Because of our culture, logistical problems, structural and conjunctural problems the country has at this moment, it's very difficult to deal with any kind of epidemic.
The National Institute of Public Health echoes the same concerns, but says it has trained hundreds of health workers, and also 100 people have been trained in contact tracing. Mariama Diallo, VOA News, Guinea-Bissau.
The past few months have seen a dramatic decline in the value of the Ugandan shilling. This fall has caused a spike in rents and a drop in salaries across the nation, with many wondering, when will it end? Elizabeth Paula has more from Kampala.
This past month, the Ugandan shilling dropped to historic lows. Vendors who pay their rent in U.S. dollars have seen a sharp spike in costs, while some healthcare clinics have started setting their prices in dollars. There are a number of factors that have caused the shilling to fall, including a stronger U.S. economy and a drop in exports to war-ravaged South Sudan. Bank of Uganda Research Director James Opelot says falling commodity prices have also hurt because most of the country's exports are commodities. Although the shilling remains low, it has stabilized somewhat due to intervention from the Bank of Uganda. Many officials blame the sharp drop on sensationalistic stories in the media that said the bank would no longer intervene in the market. Bank of Uganda Communications Director Christina Lupo says that's not true, but adds the bank does not and cannot intervene all the time.
And that has been our standard message throughout. Our message has always been that our interventions when there is excessive volatility and we are trying to restore stability to the market. And we have judged that some of the movement is by factors that are not necessarily fundamentals.
But a weak shilling has made life difficult for foreign workers. Jenny Smith says that with a family to feed, it has been frustrating.
Well, my salary is effectively $100 less a month than it was. So there's that. And like all the prices have also increased recently, of the price of shopping, like anything in supermarkets, it's not a huge amount, but it has gone up. So having a combination of less money and then higher expenses, you know, you can't make the ends meet quite as well as they were before, and it feels like it's only going to get worse the closer we get to the election.
Although many are blaming the upcoming elections for the drop, banking officials say that if people stay calm and continue to invest normally, the situation should stabilize. But those who are struggling to stay afloat in the current conditions say their time is running out. Elizabeth Pala for VOA News, Kampala, Uganda.
Our time now for Daybreak Africa Sports. And here is Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Good Thursday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, James. In our Daybreak Africa Sports News, we begin with the volleyball. Hosts Egypt beat Kenya in straight sets of 25-19, 25-14 and 25-18 in the opening match at the Africa Men's Volleyball Championships in Cairo on Wednesday. Cameroon dismissed Mauritius 3-0 as Morocco also beat Rwanda in straight sets. Today, Thursday, Botswana engage Algeria. Rwanda play Mauritius as Cameroon face Tunisia. In basketball, Australia overpowered Mali 91-23 as hosts Russia outclassed Egypt 94-37 at the Women's World Under-19 Basketball Championships in Chekhov on Wednesday. On Friday, Egypt play Brazil as Mali engage Chinese Taipei. In cricket, Namibia play Oman at the 2016 ICC 2020 World Cup qualifiers in Dublin, Ireland today, Thursday. Turning to football, Sudan's Khartoum National edged Zanzibar's KMKM 2-1. Uganda's Kampala City Council Authority pipped Ethiopia's Adama City 1-0 as Tanzania mainland's Young Africans beat Djibouti's Telecom 3-0 at the Council of Eastern Central Africa Football Association's Sekafa Kagame Club Championships in Dar es Salaam, Tanzania on Wednesday. Today, Thursday, Somalia's Higen engage Sudan's El Ahli Shandi as Rwanda's APR face Burundi's LLB. Meanwhile, Egypt's Smuha hosts the Democratic Republic of Congo's TP Mazembe in Alexandria in a mini-league tie in the Orange Africa Champions League tomorrow, Friday. In an all-Algerian showdown, USM Algiers host Mouloudia El Oulma in Algiers. On Saturday, Algerian defending champions Entente Setif welcome Sudan's El Merrekh in Setif, while on Sunday, Morocco's Maghreb Tetouan hosts Sudan's El Hilal in Tetouan. Elsewhere, Egyptian defending champions El Ahly hosts Tunisia's Etoile du Sahel in mini-league action in the Orange Africa Confederations Cup in Suez on Saturday, while Tunisia's Esperance welcome Mali's Stade Malien to Tunis. On Sunday, Egypt's Zamalek are at home to the Republic of Congo's AC Leopards in Cairo as Tunisia's CS Sfaxien hosts South Africa's Orlando Pirates in Sfax. Finally, Sierra Leone Challenge hosts Algeria in the return leg of their African Under-23 Championship qualifier in Blida on Saturday. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Mark. Have a good day. And briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. Nearly 30 people were killed and more than dozens more were wounded in multiple bomb blasts at two bus stations in the northern Nigerian city of Gombe late Wednesday. No group immediately claimed responsibility for the blast, but they bore the hallmarks of Boko Haram, which has previously targeted crowded bus stations, markets, mosques, and churches during its bloody six-year insurgency. U.S. President Barack Obama has celebrated the growth of American economic links with Africa as he gets ready to visit Ethiopia and Kenya in the coming days. Speaking Wednesday evening at a White House reception marking the signing of the African Growth and Opportunity Act, Mr. Obama said despite its challenges, Africa is incredibly dynamic and resilient with extraordinary opportunities for the United States. He said the trade law will continue to encourage good governance, labor rights, and human rights in Africa. And at least 15 people drowned when a ferry collided with a cargo boat and capsized on the Nile River near Cairo Wednesday night. That is it for this Thursday, July 23rd edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford and reporters Peter Clarty, I'm James Potty in Washington, wishing all of you in Africa a very good Thursday.
On Africa News Tonight, we let the sound tell the story, putting you in the middle of events from Africa's news to world crises. Africa News Tonight comes to you live from the Voice of America on the following shortwave frequencies. 6080 kilohertz and 15580 kilohertz. We are also live on the internet at www.voaafrica.com.
Next on Let's Talk, join host Sunday Shumari and his guest discussing obesity, an issue of concern all over the world. This lighthearted show also covers topics that are important to you. Let's Talk comes to you Mondays at 17:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa. So we hope you tune in.